Some jarring scenes there from the single car rollover accident in Los Angeles suburb yesterday involving Tiger Woods. We now know that he's recovering from a lengthy surgery to repair what a doctor said were significant orthopedic injuries to his right lower extremity. We now welcome ESPN reporter Gene Wojciechowski to discuss more. And Gene, thank you so much for being with us this morning. I understand you're down there in LA, right outside the hospital. Gene, what do you think is the greatest concern facing Tiger at this point?
Well, Molly, I've spoken with three orthopedic surgeons, two of them trauma specialists, one who actually trained at this medical facility, and they all say to a man that the risk of infection is really the number one concern right now. We saw that with the Alex Smith situation after his injury and during his his surgeries. Infection is what scares them the most. And they say moving forward, Tiger's doctors clearly made that a priority last night as they were preparing him for surgery. And even moving forward, they say, Molly, that it won't surprise them at all if he has to go in on a daily or every other day basis to go in there and do a procedure that cleans out that area, that keeps it clean, that lowers that risk of infection. Another thing that they have to do is called a fasciotomy, is where they have to relieve the pressure on the muscles. And if they do that, it lessens the chance of those muscles dying. So there are a lot of balls in the air right now, a lot of things at play. But the one doctor that I spoke with here who trained here said they brought him to the right place. This facility is built for trauma situations just like this, and Tiger is in a great place receiving great care.
Gene, knowing you, you haven't been standing just outside the hospital. Knowing you, you've been scouring the scene and everything like that. Can you talk to me about what you've seen at the crash site itself?
I went there last night. I got to L.A., I don't know, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, drove to the crash site, and drove up and down that Hawthorne Boulevard. And, you know, as the authorities said yesterday, that is a trouble area as far as being able to keep your speed at a low enough level. I drove it two or three times. It's a 45-mile-an-hour speed limit, Stephen, and it didn't take anything at all to look down, and I was going 60, and I was pumping the brakes. I pulled over, went to the crash site, walked around. There were other people there saying Tiger missed this telephone pole by the shortest of margins, and then there was another tree there that he almost could have hit. I mean, really, when the authorities said yesterday he's lucky to be alive, it really is. When you see the scene, you walk it, you see how fast he might have been going, it really is miraculous that he's alive today.
How do you think Tiger is going to handle the questions coming his way, for example, about his recovery?
Yeah, well, I think right now there's two kinds of recovery. There's the golf recovery, which is laughable right now to even think about. Then there's just functioning on a day-to-day basis recovery part of it. I was told by these trauma surgeons that he is looking at a 8 to 12 month recovery period. There are still a lot of things that have to happen for him, and a lot of procedures that he's going to have to deal with, and a lot of recovery. So, you know, look, if you want Tiger to do something, tell him that he can't do it. You know, Butch Harmon, his former longtime teacher, told us that one time. He said, you want Tiger to do something, tell me can't do it. So he faces a very long and very tough struggle here for recovery. But if anyone has shown that they can do it, it's this guy. He has shown it over and over again. He's not afraid of the most difficult challenges. He faces one now.
Gene, you talked, before you started off by saying when we talk about his recovery in terms of golf and what have you, it's almost laughable. I want you to expound on that. What are the kind of things that you hearing from people in the golf world? Because I know you're connected in that world as well. What are the kind of people what are the kind of things you're hearing about Tiger and a potential recovery as it pertains to playing golf? We should be thinking about that now. I think most people are not, but inevitably, because it's Tiger, you can't help but ask.
Well, you know, so much depends, Stephen A., on what the situation really is. I mean, we got the statement last night. It clarified some of it, but there still are a lot of questions. You know, one thing that doesn't get the attention it should, you know, they repaired his foot and ankle. That is no small thing. And so we have to wait and see to what extent he has to deal with that. There's the tibia and the fibia. There's, you know, are there other injuries involved in this that we don't know about yet? Yes, we did get clarification on the right lower leg, but are there other things that he's going to have to deal with moving forward that we're not aware of yet? So there's so many unknowns, but as far as his recovery and how it applies to golf, I don't even know how you can answer that right now. I think the real thing for him is just to function as a regular person, and right now we don't even know, you know, what that situation is.
Of course. And Gene, as you highlighted, a long road ahead. He could be making daily hospital visits when he does get out. And thank you for highlighting how you drove down that road and how dangerous and how he barely missed that pole. And it really is a miraculous situation, as you mentioned. So that's the silver lining in all of this, and that he's getting the best care. But definitely going to be one day at a time for Tiger Woods. Gene, you're a pro's pro. Thank you so much for your time this morning. We'll talk to you soon.
Of course.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience, the formula for winning championships, is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. We continue our profile of Jackson State University, whose athletic programs have won 149 Southwestern Athletic Conference championships. Now let's hear from JSU's new head football coach, primetime, our friend Deion Sanders, who was interviewed on our behalf, I love this, by his sons and members of the Tigers football team, keeping it in the family, a lot of star power, Shador and Shad.
Teary-eyed because the guys presented me with the game ball, one of the best moments I've ever had in my professional sports career emotionally.
What was the reason you wanted to be the head coach at Jackson State? And what really just brought you here?
You guys, I wanted to coach you guys on the same team again.
Before you knew we was coming, what brought you over here?
God spoke in my spirit and challenged me to come here and provoke change, not just at Jackson State, but for all HBCUs and level the darn playing field.
The people want to know how far we're going to take it, though. I mean, we know.
We're going to the bridge, baby. Then we're going to cross it. Then we're going to go back cross it. Then we're going to go back cross it again. When have we ever have done anything? I ain't never have done nothing. So we're going to do this thing like it has never been done before, but there's an expectation of that. You know, I have an expectation. I think what people got to understand is not only me, but several members of the coaching staff, we come from the pros, man. So our level and our thought process and our understanding is here, and what we've seen, what we've felt, and what we've dealt with in the Super Bowls and all that, and the playoff games. Man, we have experience and we know how this look.
How would you have coached a younger version of you? Here go Primetime 2.0 right now.
How would you coach me, pretty much?
Oh well.
You are tough. You are the son to keep me on my knees and keep me praying, because you're challenging. You're very challenging. You always have questions instead of just doing what we tell you. You always have questions. He, on the other hand, he gets what I say later, but he internalizes it and he tries to incorporate it, but he'll see the fruit thereof of it later. But both of you guys are phenomenal players, and I think you're gonna play on Sundays one day.
So how does it feel to be able to coach us now at the next level?
Well, it feels good, but I hadn't been able to coach you guys at a college game. Both of you guys are ineligible to play because he played last year in South Carolina, and you still considered a high school kid, even though you graduated from high school. So you're not eligible to play until September 25th. As of right now, if my count is correct, I think we're at 192 days. Something like 192 days until we get down. September 5th. So I'm counting those days now. Well, I walk towards the end zone and our conversation thereof that we will have. And when we hit that end zone, that power line, and come back the other way, it's time to get down.
So since we got players that can't play, and you know the players are already here, what are you looking to get out of this season, this spring season?
Now you guys got to be excited. You guys got to be excited to understand that what we did this past Sunday, and we did that with probably four or five guys that is going to have to fight for a starting job in the fall on both sides of the ball, and that equates to a better special teams as well. And we were very dominant in all three phases of the game, and I was particularly happy about that.
How do you think HBCUs will get big players coming out of high school?
Well, everything. Every phase of it, we got to improve so that we can attract those type of kids. So we don't give them any reason not to. We want to give them every reason to. But I don't want a child just coming here because the uniform looks good, or he think he's going to be on TV every week. I want him to come here because he think we could develop him and take him to the next level. That this is an address as well that can lead to the NFL. That's why I want him to come.
What message do you have for Stephen A. Smith?
Stephen A. is my dog. Stephen A. is my man. Even though sometimes we may disagree, but it's disagreeing out of love. I really do think Stephen A. is a national treasure that we hadn't yet recognized what all he brings to the table and how valuable he is to our community and to our people.
All right, Deion already getting his first win. Look at that, 53-0 over Edward Waters. And next up, they have Mississippi Valley State, alma mater of the Hall of Famer Jerry Rice. And Stephen A., some kind words there. You heard Prime calling you a national treasure. That's not appreciated as much as he should be, especially by your community. I also want to mention, guys, I love the way they did that interview, Shiloh Shador, and just seeing him interact with his sons. How much fun is that, that he gets the opportunity not only to be at an HBCU, help his own community, but also be with his family? So, Stephen A., I'll ask you this. What would be success for Deion at Jackson State?
Well, he's got to be, you know, you got to win football games, win division titles, win a conference championship. The last one, the division title, I think, in 2013. They were last won a conference championship in, like, 2007, if I remember correctly. You know, forgive me for diverting away a little bit. I didn't know that he had said that about me, and I'm really humbled and touched by what he had to say. Deion and I have been friends for years, and he's my brother. I love him dearly, and I have so much respect for him. Knowing what he stands for, knowing what he's about, we share a lot of, you know, private and intimate conversations with one another throughout the years, and I know how passionate he is about coaching, but I also know how passionate he is about being the leader of young men. And that's what being a part of an HBCU program is all about. And he alluded to it earlier in the interview with his sons. And obviously they look like him, you know, they can ball and you can see how much of a proud papa he is. And I love the imagery of them talking to him and interviewing him, because just like he has strived to influence them obviously all their lives as their daddy, this is what he wants to do. Obviously to a lesser degree, to young men, young African-American men throughout this nation. This is a man that wants to make a difference, and he knows that he has to utilize football to some degree in order to pull that off. So when you talk about him coaching this football team and striving for it to be successful, Max, he understands what it's going to lead to. the more successful he is at Jackson State, the more it shines a light on a program. As a light is shined on a program, ultimately he knows he can be the conduit to it shining a light on HBCUs, which is where a lot of black men choose to attend colleges and universities and ultimately graduate from it and go on to be contributors to our society in a very, very positive manner. And so for me to have to talk to him, to have the pleasure of having talked to him about this on several occasions, for him to be a part of an HBCU program and to lead them, he knows he's got to win, and everything about him says he's a winner. He was a winner in professional sports. He was a winner on a collegiate level. Individually, he's the greatest cornerback that's ever played football. But I'm here to tell y'all something. I don't give a damn what you see about him as an athlete, a football player, or now as a coach. In my opinion, based on my friendship with him and knowing him, it is nothing compared to the man that he is. He is an incredible, incredible person. I love him like a brother. He's near and dear to my heart all the time. And nobody roots for him more than me.
That's quite a compliment he paid you, Stephen A., especially because the subject is around HBCUs, and I want to hear actually a little more from you about what that means to you, considering the subject. I'll just quickly say that Deion Sanders, I'm trying to think in the history of sports, especially in modern history, when someone on Deion's level decided to come back and coach. Like, Michael Jordan didn't coach. You know, who was he a head coach for? Or Lawrence Taylor or you know, the whoever it is, Joe DiMaggio, or, you know, the greatest players throughout history, generally don't come back and coach. And certainly at a place that represents the kind, in certain respects, their beginnings. That is unique. And a lot of times it's because the super talented don't understand what it takes for, like, normal human beings, not supernaturally gifted human beings, to win. They get frustrated, right? Like, why can't you do it the way I did it? And that's not Deion Sanders. He's in the argument for greatest athlete of all time, considering the way he played football especially, but also baseball. And what he's showing now at this point of his life is a new dimension, especially when you consider the way he was treated by the media early in his career. He's being selfish by trying to play two sports, stuff like that. We see a real selflessness and sense of purpose that he hasn't been given enough credit for. But I'm curious to know more about your feelings, especially more than your thoughts, with that compliment he paid you, especially around the issue of HBCUs.
Well, I'm humbled by it. You know, I think that, you know, one of the things that I consistently have said, Max, is that there is no, I don't care if it's an individual, if it's a team or anything, there is nobody, outside of me trolling Cowboy fans, of course, there is nobody that can look at me and when I have to call people to the carpet or get on them about what they have done or what they're doing, there's no one that can look at me and say that I'm somebody that's rooting for somebody to fail. My attitude is I want everybody to get this. I want to try to uplift as many people as I possibly can. But I'm unapologetic about the fact that although that I'm that way in general, there's a special place in my heart for black folks because of the challenges that we face day in and day out coming from disenfranchised communities throughout this nation. And that's one of the things that I've religiously talked to guys like Primetime and others about. And two people that really touched me, and I've brought this up sporadically in the past, is Deion Sanders and Isaiah Thomas, the Hall of Famer that is Isaiah Thomas. I was a high school reporter, Max Kellerman, in New York City for the New York Daily News. And I remember one time I showed up to a practice. The Detroit Pistons were scheduled to play the New York Knicks. Isaiah Thomas was approaching retirement. At that particular moment in time, he wasn't talking to the media, but he saw me. And he said, come over here, young fella, and he granted me an interview. Nate Tiny Archibald did the same thing. Years later, when I was covering college sports and Prime Time was the man and all of this other stuff, he saw me in the walk into the locker room, and he came to the media and he said, I'm done. He was talking to the media, he said, I'm done. And came over there and gave me a hug and started talking to me, and that was the first time we had met. And at that time, he was a Baltimore Raven. He was a Washington Redskin. He wasn't with San Francisco or Dallas. And I think back to moments like that where you see a person that has arrived and they reach back to uplift you. They see some potential in you. They talk to you. They give you guidance. But they never encourage you to compromise yourself or who you are or what you're supposed to be doing in this business. And I love the fact that when he brought me up, he pointed out the fact that we disagree, because we do disagree from time to time. We just disagreed the other day, because even though I thought he was absolutely 1,000% correct in what he said, when somebody stole something from his locker, I came on First Take publicly saying, hey, you know what? I might have handled that a little bit differently, more in-house. That was one of the things that we disagreed about. It's not the first time we've disagreed with each other. It ain't the last time. But he knows that I'm rooting for him, and I wish him the best. And just because I might disagree with what he may have done, or he may disagree with what I may have said, we don't disagree with who we are as men, as black men, and our mission to help uplift as many people from our community as possible, and to go about the business of putting forth our due diligence to be all that we can be, so we can help inspire others from the communities that we come from to be all they can be. We're like-minded in that regard. We're like-minded in that agenda, as is Isaiah Thomas and so many others. And that's where the love comes from, man. Looking each other in the eye, man to man, knowing that we're as real and as authentic as we can possibly be with one another, and knowing that we care about stuff like that. That's one of the reasons, Molly. You know what? There's been times in the past where we've myself with Jalen Rose, you know, we disagreed on a basketball matter and all of this other stuff. What that brother does in Detroit to contribute to his community and stuff like that. I mean, it's just, you see Ryan Clark, he's got a fitness center. He's helping out young brothers in the NFL on the come up. I'm just so humbled and yet so proud to know so many people by being fortunate enough to work in this business and work for ESPN and beyond, to come across all the brothers and sisters that I know who go about the business of trying to extend themselves to help others on the come up, to recognize the fact that, you know what, it don't mean a damn thing if you at the top all by yourself and you ain't doing anything to reach back and help people to ascend to the levels that you are. So many people in our line of work are doing the same thing that I strive to do every day. And when we look each other in the eye and we know we're like-minded, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing to see. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing to hear. Again, I'm humbled by what he had to say to me about me, but I feel the exact same way about him. I love him dearly, as I do all those other people that I mentioned, because I know who they are. I know what they stand for. And when it comes to HBCUs, that's just added incentive to love him even more. And I'm really humbled by what he had to say.
No question. It's about paying it forward. And I can't wait to see what he does at Jackson State.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Some jarring scenes there from the single car rollover accident in Los Angeles suburb yesterday involving Tiger Woods. We now know that he is recovering from a lengthy surgery to repair what a doctor said were significant orthopedic injuries to his right lower extremity. Here was a reaction from around the sports world following news of the accident.
At this point, it's not about golf. It's about, you know, his quality of life and being there for his kids. And that's the most important thing right now. So hopefully he makes a full recovery to be there for them, you know, because he got a lot of life to live.
Man, I just hope he's all right. Just worry for his kids, you know. I'm sure they're struggling.
I just want to send my prayers off to Tiger Woods and his family, man. Like, he means a lot to a lot of people, for a lot more than just sports.
I have no doubt in my mind he'll be back, and take him a little longer, I'm sure, but from my perspective, he's one of the most impressive human beings I've ever met, and I think that he'll come back just fine.
All right. Daniel Rappaport tweeting this, an incredible tribute to Tiger at St. Andrews, the home of golf today. The entire sports world is united in wishing him a speedy recovery. And here at ESPN First Take, it's no different. Be sure to join us Friday on First Take. We'll be joined by Pelican superstar Zion Williamson. Congrats to him, just named to his first All-Star game. Welcome to Zion. We'll ask the young phenom who the best dunkers are in the league and so much more. Don't miss it Friday.
What's up, y'all? Natasha Cloud, guard for the Washington Mystics and WNBA champion. I want to wish you all a happy Black History Month as we commemorate all the amazing, amazing achievements of our Black kings and queens, not only in sports, but in all aspects. Happy Black History Month, y'all.
All right, as we celebrate HBCU Wednesday on First Take, we've been profiling Jackson State University, one of two HBCUs with a clinical doctoral program in psychology and the only school of public health in the state of Mississippi. So we've heard from students about attending JSU. Now it's time for the students to play First Take producer as they provide debate topics for Stephen A. and Max.
Attending an HBCU is very important to me because of the rich history and legacy that it holds each and every day. On my campus, my dear old college home, Jackson State University, we showcase this each and every day as we walk down the plaza from the games on Saturday nights to the boom plan. This is why I chose Jackson State University.
All right, now it's time for the students, fellas, to decide the debate. And we are going to start with criminal justice major Javius McInnes.
Now my question for you, Stephen A. Smith, is do you think Kevin Durant and the Brooklyn Nets are going to be able to win a championship this year?
Yes. 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 The only hiccup, potentially, is Anthony Davis coming back 100%, which I don't think is going to happen. The Brooklyn Nets are my favorite to win the chip. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, look, if AD doesn't come back 100% healthy, I agree with you. There could be hiccups on the way. I'm not positive they get by the Sixers. And if AD is healthy, that's a hell of a finals. Maybe I would take the Lakers there, but woo, the Nets are a whole lot of, and now they're starting to play defense.
They are a problem.
All right, next up, fellas, we got Warren Newman, also a criminal justice major here. Warren.
I want to know, what do the New Orleans Pelicans need to win the championship?
They need a few things. I got to give Brandon Ingram some credit where credit is due. He's averaging 24 a game. He's shooting 46% from the field. He looks impressive. I'm shocked that a Stan Van Gundy team is ranked like 25th defensively. I'm shocked by that. I expected them to be better defensively because he's such a damn good coach. But I think they'll get their act together. But I think that, you know what, I think they need an elite point guard, to be quite honest with you. I really, really do. You know, Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson, they're going to do their thing. I get that. I like some of the young pieces that they have, but I think they need an elite floor general. I would love, Max Kellerman, for example, to see a young Chris Paul with those guys. That would have been special. Just as an example.
Well, young Chris Paul is an improvement there, although I think they have talent there, too. When you look at that roster, it's good, it's young, it's improving. Yeah. The answer is time. They need experience, and before you talk about anything else they need to add, Zion's got to take the next step eventually. I'm not saying, oh, he hasn't done it already. You know, it's very early still, and he's very young.
Second
but
year.
But in the next couple of years, Zion Williamson's got to become an MVP candidate. And if he can do that, the Pelicans will be in contention for a championship.
In fairness to him, though, Max, his second year, the brother's averaging 25 on 61% shooting.
Oh, he's a monster.
I mean damn. I mean, it's not too far off, this is what I'm trying to say. Zion's doing his thing now.
He's a beast. He's a beast. But also, Brandon Ingram, as much as he's putting up those numbers, I don't look at Brandon Ingram and think that's one of the 10 best players in the league or even in the West.
He's good,
so
though.
I think also he has to take the next step, and he's taken a bunch already.
He is showing that he's better than Kyle Kuzma at this point.
Oh, yeah.
And again, Zion will join us on Friday. Finally, guys, we have a biomedical engineering major, Kayla Owens.
My question is, do you think the Dodgers will be repeat champions of the World Series?
Ooh, go ahead with that one, Max. I'll give you that
well,
one first.
I would say, yeah, I would say this. Baseball is more luck-based than, let's say, the NBA basketball, mm-hmm. where you can run all your plays through your best players and all that. There's less to chance. But this is the thing about the Dodgers. They play money ball with money. They have the best analytics or among them. They got the biggest payroll or among it. And when you look at the way they construct this team, Stephen A., there are things you can do to tilt the postseason, a small sample size in your favor. You can get hitters that don't have a huge variance in terms of how they hit good pitching and bad pitching. Those guys will tend to hit better in the playoffs. The Dodgers are aware of all these things. Swing and miss stuff from your starting pitchers. They bring on Trevor Bauer to a team that just won the World Series, and now we're asking, do they even need Clayton Kershaw back? After he got the monkey off his back by pitching the way he did in the postseason and winning a World Series finally. Yeah, the Dodgers are probably the favorites to win the whole thing again.
They should be the favorites, Max, and I'll give you a more simplified reason because taking into account all those things you just said, which was right on the money, here's the deal. They got the monkey off their back. 1988 was the last time they won a World Series. They had numerous bites at the apple and they didn't get it done. And then in bubble play, I tell you right now, during the coronavirus pandemic, with sparse crowds and things of that nature, it was incredibly exciting watching that World Series. It really, really was. And to see them, you know, get that monkey off their back, that proverbial monkey off their back, I think now it's easy sailing. I think this upcoming World Series, as much as I hate to admit it because I'm a diehard Yankee fan, I think it'll be much easier to capture than last year's.
Hey, Stephen A., real quick, two words, too, that we have to say. Mookie Betts.
Betts.
Whew. That yes. dude, if he, I understand yes. in a league with Mike Trout, it's hard to say anyone else is the best player, but he might be the dude you want. He is exciting and shows up.
You did in say big two moments. Words. You did say two words. Let's go. We got some debate.
Well, come on. Mookie Betts.
Not 15. Really quick, before we get to the debate, I just want to say thank you to JSU for making today really special for us, the faculty and the students. All right, the NBA announced the reserve selections for next month's All-Star Game in Atlanta on Tuesday night, and there were some notable omissions that had the NBA world on fire last night. Let's bring in our guy Kendrick Perkins to join us as we dive into this conversation.
KP.
Kendrick, we'll get to you in a moment. Stephen A., you're up first. Who was the biggest All-Star snub?
This hurts me to say. I got to admit to you, I think it was Devin Booker. And the reason why I say it hurts me to say, in the interest of full disclosure, y'all know that not only do I do this show and I host my other show, Stephen A's World, and SportsCenter, you know, with Stephen A for my NBA show, but I'm also executive producing a docuseries, you know, Why Not Us, on the North Carolina Central University basketball program. It's me with Roadside Entertainment and CP3, Chris Paul. And the reason why I say it hurts me to say this is because I love Chris Paul and I love his game and I love the fact that he's an all-star. But if you're going to pick a Phoenix Sun, it was supposed to be Devin Booker before Chris Paul. That's my issue. I look at all of these guys. All of these guys on the squad are deserving of being on the squad. Somebody was going to get snubbed, and we get that. But when I look at the Phoenix Suns, you're 20-10, okay? You're 20-10. You're the top four seed in the Western Conference as we speak, okay? Devin Booker is leading the way with 24 a game on 50% shooting. He's balling and nearly 40% shooting from three-point range. He's gotten better. They're a top four, top five defensive team in the NBA. Monty Williams, oh, by the way, look. When we sit here and we talk about the paucity of black coaches in the National Basketball Association, black men that have been assistants for years that are getting bypassed and ain't getting the opportunity. I mean, there have been examples before, but the job that Monty Williams is doing in Phoenix, is anybody paying attention? 8-0 in the bubble. People thought it was a fluke. They come out. They start off 11-9 or something like that. They've won 9 of their last 10 games. They are balling. And Devin Booker is leading the way. Love CP3. Love him. And happy for and proud of his leadership with the NBPA. Proud that he gets on the court and do what he does. But if there was a Phoenix Sun that was supposed to be on the All-Star game, on the All-Star team out of the Western Conference, It was supposed to be Devin Booker before CP3. And I think even CP3 would agree with that. I'm sorry.
Look, I'm glad you brought up who should be left off, because you can say whatever you want about a snub. It's only a snub. Now tell me who you're going to snub who's on the team. So I agree with you, by the way, on the Western Conference. If you're talking about guards, Devin Booker ahead of CP3, and that's saying a lot. CP3 has been great. But I'll tell you something else. Devin Booker has to be on the team. He has to be on the team. I don't care what you have to do, because it's an all-star game. And the star appeal and the spectacular nature of someone's game has got to matter in a tiebreaker. Even sometimes, I'll tell you, Paul George, the great two-way player, he's having an all-star season, the whole thing. You want to say, well, actually, technically, he's more valuable because of this and that. I would take Devin Booker before I took him. I got to be honest. I would take Devin Booker before a whole bunch of guys. They were 8-0 in the bubble. They were undefeated in the bubble. They win twice as much as they lose this season. And his game reminds me of, you know, we talk about attitude and who reminds you the most of the Mamba mentality and everything. But his offensive game reminds me of a little mini Kobe Bryant. Like, what can't he do offensively in terms of scoring? Devin Booker's got to be on the team.
Look. Stephen A. Max, I don't disagree with you, disagree with either one of you. I strongly believe that Devin Booker should be on the team, and I do believe he got snubbed. But here it is. You know, I come from old country Beaumont, Texas, and I was raised by my grandparents, and my grandmother is from Louisiana. And when someone makes a dumb mistake, she used to always say, God bless their heart, baby. They don't know no better. And that's how I feel about the coaches right now. Because the way that they did Domantas Sabonis is just ridiculous, okay? This guy is so valuable to the league. It's crazy. He is a baby Jokic. He does everything for this Pacers team. He is averaging 21 points, almost 12 rebounds a game, with 5 dimes a game. The offense runs through him. It's nothing that he can do. Offensively, you talk about a great passing big, he's up there. You talk about a great rebounder, he's up there. You talk about a guy that's able to put it on the floor and put it in the basket in majority of the ways, he's up there. Now, who would I take off the list in the Eastern Conference? It's Vucevic. I always struggle with his name. But for, I would take him off for the simple fact that the coaches vote for the reserves, okay? And they always want to move the goalposts, and they say, oh, we want to vote someone in that is performing at a high level individually and impacting winning. The Orlando Magic are not winning right now. So how did he make it above Sabonis? Well, Sabonis has to get his just due, and I feel like he was the biggest snub.
That's a good choice. I still don't think it's bigger than Devin Booker, but that's a damn good choice that you make. I know we got to move on. The only thing that I want to say is, Big Perk, I got to get on you about something. If you want somebody to come at you on a debate show, man, you can't be bringing up grandma. How are we going to disagree with grandma? You can't do that to us. I mean, what are we supposed to do? We can't come back at you and hey, we don't care about what grandma did. No, of course we do. We can't say anything about grandma. You can't do that to us. That's handicapping us, man.
No, but Stephen A., I just wanted to throw that Louisiana slang out there, because, you know, when they say bib, he be saying that a lot. That's all.
Okay. All right. I'll go with
Stephen
that.
Stephen A., I'm trying to get Granny on the radio show. Yeah, I'm trying to get Granny on the radio show. And I'll tell you something else. I think she wants to come on, and Perk is keeping us apart. That's right, Perk. I said it.
Nah, I want Stone on First Take. That's who I want on First Take. I want the little one right there, Mac. You remember? That's who I want on First Take. That's who I want to see on First Take. That's who I want to see. I'm sorry.
Oh, you.
Special family.
That box office right there. Perk.
They don't know no better. All right, guys, let me get in one more debate here before we say goodbye. So moving on, this year marked the shortest offseason in the history of the NBA. And despite that, we've seen some of the biggest performances from the league's brightest stars. That being said, who's been the best player in the NBA this season, Max?
Joel Embiid. At this point in the season, Joel Embiid's been the best player in the NBA. Let me tell you something. This shocked me. First of all, offensively, look at all the numbers. He's been the best. Look at all the numbers. He's been the best offensively. Defensively, I would argue, he's also been the best. There's offense and there's defense. Well, what else is there? There's winning. His team has the best record in the conference. They can't win without him. Very, you know, much, much better record with him than without him, in spite of the fact that Simmons is also playing very well. No, it's Joel Embiid, and here's something that blew my mind. Guys, do you know who has the highest scoring average per 36 minutes in the history of the NBA for their careers? For their careers, because Jordan's number one, KD is number three, Kobe's on that list in the top 10. Number one per 36 minutes for his career after he dropped 50 the other day? Joel Embiid. People don't know. And this year, guys, he's in shape and he's healthy. He's been the best player in the league so far.
Well, with all due respect to GOAT LeBron James and Joel Embiid and Big Jokic, the best player in the league this year, February 24th, 2021, has been James Harden. Look, not only is he the best player, he's the best point guard in the league. And if you look at what James Harden has been doing this season is arguably his best season of his career. Yes, he's only averaging 25 points, but we all know he's capable of averaging 30. He's done it the last 3 years, averaged 30-plus a night. But look, on top of that, he is averaging his highs in rebounding at 11.6. He's averaging 11.6 assists, leading the league in assists. He's averaging 8.5 rebounds, his career high. He's averaging a career high of shooting 50 from the field. So let me take you down memory lane for a second. The Brooklyn Nets just went on a West Coast trip. First stop, Golden State Warriors. James Harden goes into Steph Curry Arena and gives him that business. They take a bus ride to Sacramento. He goes down, been hearing the chatter about De'Aaron Fox. He gives them that work. And then on a back-to-back, he goes to Phoenix. Without Kevin Durant and without Kyrie Irving being down 21 at the half, while the Phoenix Suns had been on a six-game winning streak at home, and goes and drops 38, 11, and 7. And then he flies to L.A., back to Compton where he was born and raised, and take on the top dogs in the Lakers and Clippers and hand them the business. And then fly back home. We leave off the road. We went 5-0. We come back to the crib. Forget the time zone. That's not going to affect me. Well, Sacramento Kings have been waiting on them. And guess what? He dropped a 29-point triple-double with a dub without Kevin Durant again. The Nets are on a 7-game winning streak. This is some of the best basketball that I've seen James Harden play. And right now, today, he is the best player in the league.
Max Kellerman, I almost think it's almost sacrilegious to leave LeBron James out of the mix, Max and KP. But for the purposes of this argument, I got to admit, I'm going to side with Big Perk on this. James Harden has been sensational. He's averaging 25 and 11. He's shooting 48% from the field, nearly 40 from three-point range. He's shooting better than 85% from the free throw line. Oh, by the way, he's putting up double-doubles like it's going out of style. He dropped 38 on Phoenix. I'm looking at the numbers here. He dropped 37 on the Clippers. We know what he's been doing, and he's leading the way. And then when you take into account the fact that Kevin Durant has been out, it hasn't mattered. The fact that people were calling him out of shape because he was, it didn't matter. The fact that he had created some controversy because people were calling him out because of how he departed from Houston and what have you. You just look at that, and we forgot the fact that, excuse me, we needed to appreciate the reality that it clearly wasn't about the money, because he was offered a 2-year extension at $103 million and turned it down because he's prioritized winning. And then he shows up in Brooklyn with Kyrie as a teammate, with KD as a teammate, with guys like Jeff Green, Joe Harris, TLC and the crew to appease. And somehow, some way, he takes over ball handling and point guard responsibilities and has played like the best point guard in the game, not to mention the fact that his defense in the post area, showing his strength, he couldn't be pushed around. Just ask Kawhi Leonard how tough he was, how difficult he was in the post in terms of defense. James Harden
has been nothing short of sensational. He is a league MVP candidate. And even though Joel Embiid is playing lights out, it does help that they surrounded him. Tobias Harris is having a career year. Tobias Harris, Seth Curry has been playing lights out. Ben Simmons is still doing what he's doing. So that, and he's got the coaching of Doc Rivers. James Harden just simply is James Harden.
This is
showing his level of unselfishness, his selflessness, and he is leading this team. He's a league MVP candidate, and I got to side with Big Perk on this.
He is a candidate. He's playing the most impressive ball of his career, and that's saying something. I totally agree. I think he missed too many games with the Nets early to push him ahead of Embiid, considering Embiid's offense, defense, and the Sixers' record. But Harden is showing you something right now. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Bye, y'all. See you in the morning.